America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We welcome you back to the pound for pound undisputed best boxing podcast in the world. It's because I'm joined every single week by Chris Algieri. I am Dan Canobio. We are presented by PPV.com, and we got a big one this weekend. Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk, all four belts on the line, Saudi Arabia, and you can order it through PPV.com. We're taking over the chat, me and Chris. We're going to be in that chat. We're going to be chatting with you from the beginning of the card to the end of the card. Kevin Ioli will also be in there as well. So order the fight through PPV.com. If you've been listening to this show, you know how awesome it is. Zero subscriptions. You order through your phone. You order through your tablet. You order through your big screen TV. We're never going to ask you to subscribe. We're only going to ask you to enjoy a very nice, clean, and strong stream. We're giving away pay-per-views all week long, so keep it locked to our social media. It's awesome. It's the best way to order pay-per-views. They power everything we do. They're great partners. Chris Algieri, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, I'm super excited for this fight this weekend. Yeah, we are going to be in the chat all afternoon because the fight is super early, guys. The people who don't know, I think, what are we starting at, 12? I think we're going to be
12 noon start on the East Coast. It's I don't want to get negative right away.
It's our Saturday, bud.
I don't want to get Yes, Saturday during the day, but we have Saturday night.
Yeah, but then there's more fights.
Yeah. Damn it, I'm just a – we are just – this is what we do.
Somebody asked me, like, well, hey, man, when do you have time off? And I go, I work 7 days a week. Boxing is a full-time job. I do this every single day of my life.
Well, that was part of my pitch to John Boy when they were like, well, what the hell is boxing about? I was like, well, it's a global sport, and there's no off-season. So it's 24/7 content. So there's like baseball has an off season. So at John Boy, their November to March it was slow because there was no baseball. Like there's no off season in boxing. Like there's no off season in this podcast game. There's no off season in this content game.
How many shows are we doing this year? What are we scheduled for?
110.
110.
light work.
Not something. Those guys, 110.
It's not something I think about when I put my head on the pillow and gets a cold sweat comes down my brow. But 110 podcasts coming your way. I'll tell you what though, Chris, as we've been doing more shows, right? We're doing two a week. I noticed that everything is going like, oh, people love the consistency. The feedback I'm getting is like, if you do two a week, you know that you're getting one Monday, you know you're getting one Thursday or Friday. That's fun. We love doing the job. We're not complaining. It's just, it's fun. It's a really fun thing. And it's really fun when you got fights like Fury and Usyk coming up this Saturday. It's here. It's beautiful. I'm starting to get really, really into it. It was supposed to happen in February, but we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on what we have right now. And what we have right now is a four belt undisputed fight. We're going to figure out who is the best in the heavyweight division.
Is it going to be Tyson? Baddest man on the planet.
Baddest man on the planet. I know you subscribe to that.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It's a cool thing about boxing. It's a cool thing. The baddest man on the planet. We still want to know who's the heavyweight king. And it's been Tyson Fury for this generation, right? Undefeated. He has taken down Deontay Wilder. He has taken down Francis Ngannou, hardly. But this, I feel like, is one of his toughest fights. I feel like this is a big one for Fury. It's a big one for Usyk. I got some narratives. You know I love a good, juicy narrative. I'll start with Usyk. This is the culmination of Usyk's career. I mean, this is the biggest test of his career, literally. Tyson Fury is the final boss for him, and he's 6'7". He's the bigger man. That's the coolest aspect of heavyweight boxing, in my opinion, is that a smaller man can beat a heavy man, a taller guy.
6'9", by the way.
6'9", excuse me. Someone in the chat, someone in the comments would be like, he's 6'9", Dan. Sorry. Six. Thank you for auto-correcting me right on the spot. But this is the biggest test for Usyk, literally. Like, he has been undersized at heavyweight. He's been undersized his whole career. Maybe the best cruiserweight ever, undisputed there. He could become undisputed at heavyweight. He's taking on Tyson Fury, who's 6'9", switch hitter, and very, very good shape now. And that's what I love about heavyweight boxing. The smaller man can chop down the bigger man. Mike Tyson was knocking fools out twice his size. That's the beauty of the heavyweight division. Can Usyk chop down Fury? Can Usyk outbox Fury? That right there is one of the cooler narratives of this fight, is Alexander Usyk chasing ultimate greatness.
Listen, he wins this fight, and I know people are going to freak out because everyone loves Evander. Listen, I love Evander too. But if you compare them, yeah, cruiserweight to cruiserweight, it's, I mean, I probably still lean towards Evander, but I don't know, man. If this guy wins the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world and is the undefeated, we got a gold medalist, unified cruiser, unified heavy. He's the best cruiserweight who's ever lived. And he's one of the best heavyweights who's of our era, for sure. No, the historical ramifications of the winner of this fight are epically big. This is right. This fight is huge.
It's huge. It means so much. It's a historic sport. There's so many records. There's so many history you can go back to. And it's just very cool for Usyk to go from cruiserweight and wipe out that entire division and become undisputed at cruiserweight, and now has a chance to become undisputed at heavyweight. Like, how much has to go right, not only just in your career, but like politically in boxing, to get those four belts and for those four belts to be available right now? Because the minute they step in the ring, or the minute they get out of the ring, one of those titles is going to be relinquished. So they'll be undisputed for like 20 minutes before one of these sniveling guys comes in and goes, I need that belt. Because this guy needs to fight for it, but so much has to go right.
Charlie doesn't have to fight for 3 years and he keeps his belt.
Right. I know. We can get into that all day long, but let's keep it pure because this is a fun one this weekend. But Usyk, it's becoming a two-division undisputed champion. It's taking down Tyson Fury, who's never lost. He has that one draw on his record, but I thought he beat Deontay Wilder. For Tyson Fury, man, questions about him. Questions about him for the first time in a long time. He's coming off that career worst performance against Francis Ngannou. Was that an aberration, or was that a sign of slippage? At age 35, he has the massive cut. I think that cut will play a role in this fight. Will it open up? He does seem very motivated, Chris. He's in tip-top shape. I think he's out to prove that he's still the best of this era. I think he's out to prove that the last fight was embarrassing, and I'm going to put that in the rearview mirror. And I also think he's ready for a potential fight with Anthony Joshua. I'm not saying he's going to look ahead of Usyk, but there's a lot motivating Tyson Fury at age 35 when he has all the money in the world, is regarded as the best heavyweight of this generation, but he can put a stamp on it by beating Usyk and then put a double stamp on it by beating Joshua. Fights that I think can happen now because of our friend, His Excellency, El Turki Shalik.
Yeah, no question last fight was embarrassing, but I think it was actually a good thing. I think it's the type of kick in the ass that Tyson Fury needed. Because when he's backed into a corner, he is dangerous. When you underestimate him, he is dangerous. He has a chip on his shoulder and something to prove. And that's when he comes out and puts on the performance of a lifetime. So I think he needed that. I think that we're going to see a very dialed in, very fit Tyson Fury. But is that going to be enough? Because I've been having some twinges, man, thinking about this fight.
Really?
Yeah, I know I've been full on Tyson for months, but I don't know, man. I've just been thinking about some things and seeing the way that Usyk is and how he's handled himself in every situation and every fight. And the guy just knows how to win. And so does Tyson. And you know, obviously he's got that huge size advantage. But man, seeing Tyson so skinny this week makes me kind of think. Like, I'm really curious what he's going to be when he steps on the scale. Because listen, he could look really thin and still be 267. And I'm like, okay, cool, that's great. But if he comes in like 254, if he comes in like 250, I'm going to be like, what is this tactic here?
Yeah, also, I agree.
I really got to see, because he does look very thin. Not that he doesn't look strong, but he looks very, very thin, looks very, very different than he has in the past. So I'm just curious to see where he's going to fall. And I did a little analyzing his weights over the years and his performances. And he's at his best when he's in that close to 260. 260, 275 range. When he gets above or below that, not his best performances. He was 254 when he fought Otto Wallin. He had great endurance in that fight, but not one of his better performances. He was really light when he fought Klitschko, but he's much, much younger. But when he fought Wilder, I think the first fight he was in the 250s, the second fight he was like 277. You know, right. And he used that size and that weight in both those fights. I think it was 277, 279 in both those fights, which he know he needed to do because of the power of Wilder. And that's the thing. I think he's very tactical in how he comes in terms of his weight. So I'm assuming that he thinks and understands that he's got a very agile guy in front of him. He's got to have to be agile himself. He's going to look to box more than you would think if that's what the tactic is for his strategy is for his weight. So this week has made me think about a lot of things. And you mentioned the cut. Dude, I can see that cut. I can see it on his eye all week. I see that line. You know, that thing still looks fresh. So that could be a factor. I don't think it really – listen, Tyson's got a guy. You can cut his head open with an axe. He's still going to fight his fight. But listen, blood in the eye is a thing, and it can affect the way a guy performs. But, yeah, this is – I don't know, man. This week is – It's got me excited for sure, but it's also getting my brain.
We will give our predictions at the end of the show, and we also have Chris's categories at the end of the show. But I really wrote down Fury's weight is a story. That's one of my notes here. And from what I hear out in Saudi and what I've seen, he looks about 260-ish. Keep in mind, he was 277 for Ngannou. That was a career high. He was, you know, he really had the muffin top going. He did not train at all. He does look very skinny. And it will affect his, or I should say, how will it affect his ability to fight? Because a lot of the pre-fight talk about this fight was almost like dismissive in a way. It's like, oh, Fury's going to smother him. He's going to put his weight on him. He's going to bully him. He can still do that at 260. He can still do that at 265.
He's still a much bigger man.
Right. Usyk's going to come in at 230, maybe. So he can still do that. But I'm curious to see how he chooses to fight this fight. You know, will he still try to smother Usyk at times? Will he fight at range? Will he fight from a distance using his jab? Will he fight orthodox to protect that eye? Is something that I'm thinking about too. So that's an interesting wrinkle of this fight. When you get past all the accolades and you get past all the hoopla, is like, how will Fury come out and fight this fight? That's what excites me, because I really get excited watching Tyson Fury box. If you can get past the antics, you get past all the stuff that a lot of fans have fatigue with. But when he's in the ring, I'm so curious about how he's going to fight. Like, the second Wilder fight was just insane to me. Like, we heard stories of him coming, like him being bigger, and he was going to sit down on his punches. He was going to knock out Wilder. I did not believe it. I picked Wilder to win that fight. I just did not think that Fury could do that. And he goes in the ring and he executes. So how will he execute against Usyk, which is a slippery guy still at heavyweight? I'll get to those numbers in a second. But that intrigues me, is how Fury's going to fight with the cut. Lower weight, 35 years old. I go back to that Carl Froch thing, where Carl Froch said that, you know, in his prime, Fury was fainting 30 times a round. And if you look at it now, he's fainting 4 or 5 times, 6 times around. Is that like fatigue? Is that old age? Is it a combination of both? So that intrigues me from Fury. We'll move on a little bit to Usyk. Another thing I wrote down here, are Usyk's legs gone? Didn't like what I saw in that Dubois fight. That was his last fight. First of all, Usyk fights once a year. I was going through his last fight. He literally fights October, September.
He is 37 years old.
37 years old, and he fights once a year. He's fought.
Yeah, everyone's talking about the age of Fury. It's like, well, Usyk's older, guys.
And one fight in 2019, one fight in 2020, one fight in 2021, one fight in 2022, one fight in 2023. And now this is his first fight of 2024. But I did not like what I saw in the Dubois fight. Yeah, he got the stoppage. Yeah, it was marred by that controversial, you know, stomach shot. But it took him a while to get that engine going. And, you know, you've said this before, and I will echo it. You know, this is a guy that depends on movement. This is a guy that depends on his legs. This guy depends on angles. If those legs are compromised, or if those legs aren't 100%, I don't really give him much of a shot in this fight. He's obviously not much of a puncher, only has 2 stoppages in his 6 fights at heavyweight. Are you seeing a little bit signs of slippage? Is that something that concerns you with Usyk?
It's hard to say, because, you know, in our sport, it's you're only as good as your last fight. And I agree with you. The last fight was not good. Dubois, he looked uncomfortable. His movement, his footwork, he just looked off. I remember I was watching the fight, and it was before one of the fights for Top Rank, and we were in the back. And Bob was in the the arena before the fight, and he's watching the show, and he's got his headset on, and he's yelling out. He's like, Usyk does not look comfortable. He does not look good. And it was true. Bob is a great eye, obviously. In his defense, though, that night the ring was wet. So footwork could have been an issue. You know, we keep talking about the legs and his feet. Was that age? Was it the ring being wet? Was it the fact that Dubois is a very big, strong, physical heavyweight? Because he showed in the Jarrell Miller fight, man, he can really punch. And we keep talking about the size of Usyk, how he's a much smaller heavyweight, which is funny to think about because historically he's not. He's 6'3", 227, 226. Like, that's not that small.
Not to cut you off, but I want to say this. Someone told me that Usyk is the same size as George Foreman.
Yeah, well, that's exactly my point. He's actually
insane.
No, he's bigger, dude. He's actually bigger. I think George was like low 220s.
And George Foreman at the time, they were like, look at this behemoth of a man, right? The most intimidating, imposing guy.
That's exactly my point. Like,
keep going.
You know, historically, he's not a small heavyweight. He's a real heavyweight. But we live in the era of super heavyweights. We have guys like Anthony Joshua, who are 6'6" and are 247 pounds with abs. And we have guys like Tyson Fury, who are 6'9" and 275 pounds. And with 85-inch reaches, you know, you have Deontay Wilder, who is only like 214, but he's, 6'7" or whatever. We live in a strange era when it comes to heavyweights, because Usyk historically is not a small heavyweight. But in this case, he is very, very small compared to Fury, who, even if he comes in, light for him, he's still going to hold a functional 45, 50-pound weight advantage. Like, that's... that's 40 to 45 pound weight advantage. That's nothing to scoff at. And in terms of his degradation, it's hard to tell, man. Like you said, the guy fights once a year. His last fight wasn't great, but there were some other circumstances. Before that, I thought he looked fantastic in the second Anthony Joshua fight. Great legs, great movement, super tough, showed strength, was very snappy, had a great gas tank. But that was like 2 years ago now. So
2 years ago.
It's hard to say where Usyk is at this point, stepping in the ring on Saturday.
It's really hard. I think he's very far removed from that Joshua fight, where rounds 10, 11, 12 of both of the Joshua fights is when he stepped it into a whole nother gear.
No, I was saying it was a masterclass of badassery.
Right. And it was like, damn, this guy's got that second gear. He's got that will to win. It's like a basketball team that goes on a run in the fourth quarter and they always figure it out. Like, that was Usyk to me in 2021 and 2022 when he had those two fights with Joshua. But like, one fight, I mean, that's a long time ago. 37 years old, long amateur career. You can poke holes in Usyk, but like you said before, he just knows how to win. The guy's a winner. He figures it out. He has an unbelievable mental game, which I think is huge. I don't think he's intimidated at all by Tyson Fury. Fury is trying so hard to get into the head of Usyk, and he's gotten to the head of a lot of his opponents, but it's not working on Usyk, at least from what I see. That's been a storyline of this fight too.
You mentioned that, but I think Usyk is a master manipulator when it comes to the head games too, and he's kept off of Tyson as well.
Just not playing into the games.
Anthony, I'm coming for you. When he's messing with Anthony Joshua, like, he's not doing that to Tyson either.
But him not like feeding into the games is mental warfare on his own. Like, he has his own way of playing games with Fury. But just to look at the DraftKings odds, it's as close as you can get to a pick 'em. It makes it even more exciting when we have an undisputed fight and you have Tyson Fury as the -120 favorite, Usyk a +100 underdog. That's razor thin. Over under is 10.5 rounds. I think it's going to go distance. Fury by decision is plus money, +210. Which is crazy, because that's kind of what should happen in this fight. Yeah. If Fury can find a way to stop Usyk, it's +300. And then you got Usyk by decision at +185. Usyk by stoppage, which I think is the least likely of the outcomes, is the highest odds, and that's +475. But
wait,
I bring
what,
up Usyk.
What was it for Usyk victory?
Usyk on points?
Yeah.
+185. Which is, it's all plus money. That's when you have a fight that's this even. It's like any outcome, you're going to, if you get the pick right, you're going to win some money here. Usyk on the money line is +100. But I bring up the Usyk by stoppage, right? +475. I wouldn't recommend putting that money down unless you think that Fury is vulnerable. And I bring up vulnerable Fury. The Ngannou knockdown was the seventh of Fury's career. and the fourth in his last eight fights. And that comes from CompuBox researcher Lee Groves.
Yeah, but how many of those were Wilder?
A lot. I think, like, if he has seven, like, well, let's think about it. You could probably count them. He got knocked down by Cunningham. He got knocked down by Fury twice in the first fight, right?
Wilder.
Wilder. Twice in the first fight?
Two or three times in the other fight. What was it, the third one?
Two in the other one. That's five or six.
Four of those are Wilder.
Okay, one was Ngannou. The most infamous Ngannou. He's got some infamous knockdowns. Like, we're talking about a guy that's ruled a division.
Yeah, the Undertaker knockdown from the last round.
Then the Ngannou one where it's going to be a picture forever when Ngannou's standing over him and him on the canvas. And then the Cunningham one was
full life size in his living room.
Yeah, I think it's one of the coolest pictures ever. And then the Cunningham one obviously isn't as notorious as those. But I was in the room that night, that day. It was an afternoon fight at the theater on NBC Sports Network. It was Fury's first fight in the U.S. We've been hearing about this loudmouth, 6'9", switch-hitting heavyweight. And he's fighting Steve Cunningham, who's a cruiserweight. It's mid-afternoon, and I think the first or second round, he's knocked down, flash knockdown. He's on the canvas, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Big overhand, big looping overhand right, catches him pulling straight back. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if, like, Usyk can do that. He only has two knockdowns at heavyweight. I'm looking at Usyk at heavyweight here. Six fights at heavyweight for Usyk now. Six wins, two stoppages. He throws 50 punches around at heavyweight. He's a lot more selective because he was throwing 70 around at cruiserweight. 40% accuracy, which is just power accuracy, really good. And his opponent's power is just 29%. So he's still very elusive at heavyweight. He's a little more selective. He's obviously very accurate. Doesn't have that game-changing power. Doesn't exactly need it or hasn't had to need it. He might need it on Saturday. But that's Usyk at heavyweight. It's crazy because it's been six fights. It's not the most murderer's row of opponents. It's let's see. He had Chaz Witherspoon. That was October 2019.
He did not look great in that fight.
No, that was his first fight at heavyweight. All those eyes on him. He was in, like, Chicago for some reason. Chisora.
Struggled mightily against Chisora.
The two Joshua fights obviously were virtuoso. And then the Dubois stoppage, which was better than mid. Like, that's it. Those are his last five fights. I mean, those are it's pretty much his heavyweight resume. And then Fury's last five is Ngannou, the split decision, the Chisora TKO 10, which was a complete waste of time. The Dillian White fight, which was also a complete waste of time, the uppercut in the sixth round. And then the two fights with Wilder, which were just thrillers. The Otto Wallin fight, and then the first Wilder fight. So it's not like Fury has this, like, outstanding resume. I think when you think of Fury as an all-time heavyweight, it's about him being so athletic and him probably being able to beat anyone. And those boxing fans love to do those mythical matchups. But neither of these guys, I mean, Joshua, yeah, that's good for Usyk. Those two wins are great. They're aging even better now. And for Fury, it's like, okay, Wilder's kind of – those wins aren't aging good. The Ngannou fight's never going to look good. So what's, like, Fury's best win? Klitschko?
Yeah. I mean,
and that fight sucked.
That fight was horrible. But that speaks to his ability to find a way to win. And we're going to talk more about that when we talk about – you know, we do the head-to-head stats on these guys. But, yeah, that was an out-of-nowhere fight. You're not supposed to beat Klitschko. Tyson Fury, at that time. So, especially with everything he had going on inside and outside of the ring, you know, especially outside the ring. But the guy's ability to lock it in and find a way to win and to strategize and execute is something else. And both these guys are like that. They're both winners. These guys don't know how to lose. They figure out ways to win. And listen, they're both not at their peaks. We'll put it that way.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, but it doesn't matter. We're getting what we got. You know, we're getting the fight, and we've been talking about the historical significance. But yeah, no, they're both not coming off great performances. They both don't have the most stellar, most recent fights. But I think historically, I think what they've done, it matters. You know, and they've done what they need to do with the guys that are in front of them, and that's just what they do. These guys win. And we got two winners. They're winners. These guys win.
undefeated fighters, pick 'em fight, pretty close. Let's do Chris Algieri's head-to-head categories. Let's go through them all. It's power, speed, defense, and ring IQ. We'll start with power. Who's got the power edge?
Tyson Fury, you mentioned that, you know, we are fighting at heavyweight. So we mentioned that Usyk only has two knockouts in his six heavyweight fights. You know, we think about that Belyu fight where he basically takes his head off with a left hand. That was at cruiserweight. So at heavyweight, the power is definitely Tyson Fury. And Tyson Fury, before the Ngannou fight, was on a heater. He was knocking everybody out. You know, he stopped Wilder twice. You know, he was looking really good. Knocked out White. He knocked out, stopped Chisora. I mean, he beat Chisora to a pulp. And Tyson has been hitting harder. You know, recently he's been using his body size a lot better. So I got power. I got Tyson.
Okay, we'll go to speed. We got two guys, one speedy guy and one not so speedy guy.
Well, I disagree. I think Tyson's hand speeds are very cool. Is very fast. Actually, he's got very quick hands for a big guy. He's long. He uses his athleticism and his length. But when you take into account everything, speed, talk about hand speed, foot speed, you know, the ability to move around the ring, I got to go with Usyk on that. His ability to get his head offline, to put his punches out with, you know, with no fat, his hand position, get his hands back into position, step around, use his footwork very well. We saw that in the Anthony Joshua fight. He's the kind of guy who stays invisible, very similar to his countryman Lomachenko. He's not a circle the ring a whole bunch kind of guy, but he is a cut angle, stay around you, keep his feet moving kind of guy.
All right, we'll go to ring IQ. This is an interesting one. We'll talk about two winners.
Yeah, so this was a tough one. I was going to give it an even one, but I didn't want to do that. I don't want to go even scorecards because then you're going to get it for both sides. So actually, I'm going Tyson Fury here. And the reason for that is because of how dynamic he is. With Usyk, he pretty much fights everybody the same way. He's mastered what he does. It's similar, almost similar to how Floyd Mayweather fought. You know, he had his moves. Those are the moves he does. He makes them work on everybody. Usyk does that. He's got those moves. He stays offside, puts that left hand on you, comes back with that jab. With Fury, though, similar to how I look at like Terrence Crawford, he's so fluid and he makes it work because he's so athletic and he's so awkward. Crawford's awkward. He doesn't fight like a traditional fundamental boxer. He finds ways to win. He's able to see things. He can fight from both sides, which Tyson Fury does well as also. He can fight from a southpaw position. He can fight from a right position. He can fight on the outside. He can fight on the inside. He can rough you up, dirty boxing, hit you with punches that he's grabbing you behind the head. He can hit you in the body. He can jab from the outside. He can flick. He can fight long. He can roll underneath shots, even at 6'9". So I think because of the versatility, I'm leaning towards Tyson Fury here for Boxing IQ. But this is like super neck and neck because I hold Usyk's boxing IQ so high. I just hold Fury's athleticism to be next level.
Yeah, it's almost like tool. Like category could be like who's got a little more tools, and I totally agree. Like Fury can win in more ways. Like he's a little more dynamic. He can just, like you said, I totally agree there. All right, now the last one is defense.
Usyk. I mean, he does not get hit a lot. He's small for this weight class. He fights real punchers. Anthony Joshua is a murderous puncher. We saw that in the Ngannou fight, and he went 24 rounds with that man. And the reason for that is because he didn't get hit that much. Because if he did, he would have been iced just like Ngannou. I don't think anybody takes those punches from Anthony. Anthony Joshua is one of the best punchers in the world. You know, his ability to stay offline, and even when he does get hit, he gets the glove up. His hand position is fantastic. He's able to slide with these punches. He uses that footwork really well. And listen, Tyson struggled with Francis Ngannou. He got dropped by Francis Ngannou, and he's been dropped a bunch of times. You mentioned that. So when we talk about defense, we also talk about chin. And so I think that it's important to think about, you know, not only do you not get hit, but how do you take the shots? And Fury's been down a bunch of times, especially lately. And Usyk just doesn't get hit that much. So defense, I got Usyk.
Yeah, I mean, Usyk only gets hit with 29% of his opponent's power. It's the best defensive metric of all the active heavyweights. He's very hard to hit. That's pretty good. This is an even fight. I mean, you got two apiece. So it's a pick'em fight. According to Vegas, it's, you know, not that these categories are the end-all be-all, but this is a very, very close fight. It's time for our final predictions for Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk. I've been going back and forth with this. I think about Fury in the cut. I think about his weight. I think about that Ngannou performance. Then with Usyk, I think about just a winner, a guy that just does not know how to lose, a guy that just has that will and is always comes out on top. And we did talk about, yeah, he's eroding a little bit, but he still has ways to befuddle just about everyone. But I'm going with the big man. I'm going with Tyson Fury by decision. You can get that at plus money. I just think he has a lot of motivation right now. I just think he has a little bit more momentum than Usyk. And I think that the big man, it's going to be hairy at times. There's going to be some close rounds. There's going to be some, it's not going to be a runaway Fury win, but I like the big man Tyson Fury to win on points.
Yeah, I listen, we've been talking about this fight for months, right? And we've always been Tyson Fury fans and favorites for this matchup. And I've been very much on Tyson Fury's side. But I'm going with what I feel right now, right? I'm not saying this is what it's going to be. My final prediction, my true final prediction is going to be Saturday, especially after I see, well, maybe Friday after I see.
No, two predictions.
Listen, this is a flip-floppy kind of fight. If this matters up until the minute. But right now, my heart is with Alexander Usyk. I got Usyk by split decision. I think he figures it out, grinds it out, and strong. And I think the weight's an issue for Tyson Fury. I think that he's going to be a little weakened. I think he's going to try to box too much instead of be physical. And I think Usyk's going to be wily enough to squeak away enough rounds. And when we come down to it, it's going to be a nail biter, but I'm going with Usyk.
Wow. That's intriguing. That's something. Imagine Usyk getting his hand raised. That story would be amazing.
And then he never needs to fight ever again. He retires right there. He's one of the best fighters.
We don't need to see Usyk Joshua 3.
Nobody needs to see that. There's nothing left to do. Bro, there's nothing left to do. You're a gold medalist. You are a unified cruiserweight champion, and you beat all the champions to get there. And you're unified heavyweight champion, and you're undefeated. You're done, dude.
I would not be mad if Usyk won. I don't think anyone would be. I think there really is Fury fatigue. All right, so head to head, right? At least on this show. I know you have a whole other platform that you are on where you can give a totally different pick, and then on Monday you can just take those two picks.
I'm going with the way that I feel right now. I'm trusting my gut at this point. I've been having this. This little thing. Last week, it was funny. We were talking about it. I was like, oh, man. And the same thing on Pro Box. Everyone's like, oh, man, is he going to pick Usyk? And I did this big, long thing. I'm like, I had this weird feeling, blah, blah, blah. But I'm still going with the big man. I'm still sticking with Tyson Fury.
Okay.
For this week, after seeing Tyson, I'm leaning towards Usyk now.
Love that. All right, guys, you can order that fight on PPV.com. Join us in the live chat. We'll have a grand old time. Let's go over quickly to the night portion of Saturday night, and that's the top-ranked fight. That features Emmanuel Navarrete in the main event. He is going up against Denis Baranchuk, who is a relatively unknown Ukrainian, just like Alexander Usyk. Fights very similar with footwork. We'll get to him in a second. But for Navarrete, he's going for a world title in his fourth weight class. Last episode, I said third. I was mistaken. Fourth weight class. He won titles at 122, 126, 130.
I agree with you. So we're both.
Yeah. So this is his first fight at 135, and of course, in the four belt era, of course, when you're aligned with Top Rank, you get a shot at the WBO title because Top Rank and the WBO are simpatico. And Navarrete Baranchuk, we know what Navarrete is. You've been watching him now for years. He's just like a Bugs Bunny type, uppercuts and punches from weird angles, 70, 75 punches around. He can look like a world beater like he did against Valdez, or he could look vulnerable like he did against Liam Wilson and Conceição. You don't know much about Baranchuk, so let me just tell you a little bit. He's a switch hitter. He's got a whirling dervish style, Chris. He's always in motion. Career-long lightweight. Throws 60 punches around. Listen, Navarrete's a minus 600 favorite. I'm not saying that Baranchuk has a chance. He's plus 600, but I think he's a live dog. I think if Navarrete doesn't have a good performance, or Navarrete comes out overlooking him, or he's not ready at 135, I know you don't know anything about Baranchuk. I'm not saying you. I'm saying maybe some of the fans out there. Yeah. This guy was a silver medalist in that same class as Lomachenko and Usyk in the Olympics. It's got an uphill battle, but he has a type of style. You'll see it on Saturday night, 60 punches around, always moving, switch hitting, that he could give Navarrete some issues.
You can't sleep on those Eastern Bloc styled guys, hardworking, great condition, lifelong in shape, live the lifestyle, highly disciplined. You know, so like you said, career lifelong lightweight. He's 36 years old. You know, making weight as you get older, it gets harder, especially if you don't live the lifestyle this guy obviously does. Now, Vedete, in his fourth weight class, he's been looking human. He looked human at 30. Now he's at 35. The big question is, how is Baranchuk going to handle a 35-pound puncher? How is he going to, even though the guy's not a puncher, a 35-pound punch, I should say, not a puncher. And how is he going to handle, you know, dealing with the guy's chin? Is he going to be able to, you know, I don't think he's going to have trouble hitting him because this guy throws that many punches, leave a lot of opportunities for Navarrete, who's got a long reach and he throws funny punches that are hard to see. So it's going to come down to how he handles being in at 135. Can he hurt this guy? You know, can he deal with the physical size if someone's going to keep moving on him? Listen, a big guy who can move, that's tough to deal with. Mm-hmm. So not an easy fight for Navarrete, but I suspect Top Rank's very smart. I suspect the matchmakers at Top Rank aren't going to pick a guy who's going to upset the apple cart because there's so many big fights available, you know, for the other guys in the Top Rank stable. You got Lomachenko, who's back. Very easy fight to make. Navarrete, Lomachenko. Huge crossover appeal for the Mexican audience for fighting Lomachenko, who's a has a global fan base. You've got Shakur Stevenson, who I know is lying in wait. They're trying to dangle that carrot so they can get him onto it for some more fights when they re-up that contract. They want to dangle those fights to him. They want it. You know, we got two world title fights right here for you. But yeah, you got to sign this. You got to sign this 3-fight deal to get them. Yeah. Or at least, you know, 3-4-5-fight deal, a 2-year deal. So you got to think that's what Top Rank is angling for. So they're very smart. They're very calculated. Top Rank plays chess. They don't play checkers. They're not a smash and grab operation. They think ahead. So I got to think that Baranchuk doesn't stand much of a chance in terms of, you know, upsetting this fight. So I'm looking at Navarrete to do what Navarrete does. You know, hopefully he makes it entertaining because, I mean, he's always in entertaining fights, but man, I just think about him struggling with Conceição late in that fight. Man, I think about him getting rocked by Liam Wilson. He's human now, and we're in a new weight class once again.
Yeah, he's human. That's what makes him kind of endearing. That's what kind of makes it fun. It's like, which version's going to show up tonight? And the one against Valdez was like, I think the best version we've ever seen of Navarrete. That was at 130.
Valdez is a stud, man. He is a really, really impressive guy too.
And like you said, Chris, it's a trap. This is a classic trap fight. That's also a world title fight, vacant. So you got that going. Like, you brought up those big fights. Like, I am not shocked if Lomachenko's next, given Shakur's contract situation. Navarrete, I mean, that's the ultimate payday for him. I mean, yeah, he's been winning titles in three different weight classes. Now this is his fourth, but he hasn't made like game changing money. And Lomachenko represents that for him. It's a huge fight. It's a unification bout. That's if Lomachenko still wants it too. Like, we had our episode last week and, you know, I saw a video where he wanted to retire, Lomachenko, and his dad kind of talked him into it. So it's not a foregone conclusion that Lomachenko fights again, but if he does, I could see Navarrete, Lomachenko. So this could be a trap fight for Navarrete. Interesting fight. Like it, we will be watching Saturday night. Of course, Top Rank loads up their cards. Giovanni Santillan, who had that awesome upset win over Alexis Rocha, is fighting Brian Norman. Richard Torres, Brandon Moore.
He's from down here. Actually, he's a Winter Haven guy, South Florida guy.
I know he's not going to stand. He's not going to win, but is he going to give Torres more than a round?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. He's man. I've seen him in the gym. Whip on really good fighters. He sparred with Tyson Fury before. He's good. He just hasn't been able to really transfer it into the ring on fight night, and he struggled with it since he signed with Top Rank, but the kick and fight.
That's good. So we'll see Torres maybe pushed a little bit. And then Emiliano Vargas.
Yes, the future. That's my guy, man. Yeah. I love that kid.
Six rounds at lightweight. So that's a Top Rank card on Saturday night. Last thing we're going to touch on is this Mike Tyson, Jake Paul press conference / card that was announced. I was there.
The floor is yours, Dan, because I got.
I was there on Tuesday at the press conference. I do work for MVP. MVP is the lead promoter of this fight. Had awesome access. Was able to talk to Mike. Was able to talk to Jake. I was in the dressing room of Tyson before he went onto the stage. I was actually like part of his entourage. I always position myself in these ways where I'm like, all right, I'm going to go with the group. And I was like part of his little entourage as he went on the stage. And then
you're a scrum ninja.
I am. This was like beyond scrum. This was like knowing where to be at the right time. And then I positioned myself on the stage to where when Mike got off the stage, I kind of followed the whole crew down into the dressing room. and we're in the dressing room after, and I thought Mike was very witty. I thought the press conference was fun. There were some moments that were, you know, them kind of laughing with each other, kind of surprised me. But Tyson was on point with his one-liners. So we get back into the dressing room after, and it's like really silent in there. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like right in front of Mike, and he's not saying anything. No one's saying anything. And I was just like, hey, Mike, like, that was really good. Like, I thought you were hilarious. And he goes, oh, you think so? I was like, yeah. And then did you see that kid? Some kid, they went up there and asked what their body count was. You didn't see that?
No.
So they opened it up to fan questions, and there was this kid who now I later learned does content. He's like a street interviewer. He's like 13. He started it off all like nice. Yes, he started it off very sweet and innocent. I know. He started it off very innocent. He was like, well, you know, what's your advice to kids that want to fight, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden he's like, yo, motherfucker, F-bombs, like, what's your body count? And Tyson goes, where's your mother? Line of the presser. This 13-year-old is asking about body counts. And wow. Tyson was not having it. That was the line of the presser. But when we got back, I said, how about that kid, Mike? And Mike was like, where was his mother? As he's like eating the food at in the green room, like cheese and stuff. I was like, this is surreal. That was a pretty cool experience. I know there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of opinions on this fight, but it was cool to see Mike in his element. The undercard is loaded. So we got Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor. They were on the stage too. They almost seemed a little like they were overshadowed, of course. You got Mike Tyson on stage and Jake Paul, but that's going to be an awesome fight that I didn't know is at 140. Did you know that?
So I spoke about the yes. I didn't realize that. And that
he's
really
huge.
That really favors Taylor.
It's 2-minute rounds, which Taylor wanted for her 140 belt. Serrano's bulking up. She is jacked. Yes, it's at 140. It definitely favors Taylor. Really excited for that fight. That's the co-main event. And then they just announced Ashton Silve, H2O Silve, who I've watched a lot of his fights. I called a lot of his fights.
He's a cool coming
prospect. Good fighter. Versus Floyd Schofield.
Yeah, good fight. 10-rounder, like, right? 10-rounder, right?
10-rounder, like, out of nowhere. This is very rare. You see two prospects of this stature and this talent level facing off at this point in their careers. Like, Silva's, like, has 8 or 9 fights. I've called most of them for MVP. Schofield is a little bit ahead of him in development. We saw him fight on Golden Boy. That's an awesome fight. That's a fight for the hardcore. So I think this fight card is going to engage a lot of different crowds out there. Of course, with the main event, you got for the hardcores with this prospect fight, you got Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. You got Chavez Jr. versus Darren Till.
Yeah, that's
we had to throw that on there.
I don't know who that's bringing in.
That's just like we have to have one fight that's like the, you know, the kind of the
contest. Tough man contest. What are we doing here?
Darren Till, who is a UFC lifer. Chavez Jr., who I'm happy to see is in a position mentally where he can take a fight. We'll see if he shows up. I don't know. Well, I always wanted him to fight Jake Paul. I was pushing for that in like 2019, 2020.
Well, he already lost to a guy who lost to Jake Paul. So
he lost to Anderson Silva, which was like the coolest moment ever.
He wasn't close either.
You were there, right? I was supposed to call that too.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be out there in Mexico. We could have been hanging before we were doing this. I love the card. I think it's got a little bit of something for everyone. I think it's going to be an awesome night. I think the main event, you're all going to be watching. As much as you don't want to watch, everyone's going to be tuned in on Netflix to see what Mike has. Everyone's talking about it. I mean, every time I open up Instagram, I'm seeing like Sebastian Maniscalco and Joe Rogan having a discussion about it. There's this whole sentiment out there. There's this whole guys of Maniscalco's age range. I would say guys of like pretty much our age range, but a little bit older, are like, there's no way in hell Jake Paul is beating Mike Tyson. Like,
okay.
And then there's like people like who have seen Jake fight.
Their head screwed on straight. And
yeah. People that aren't blinded by nostalgia, people that aren't blinded by the aura of Mike Tyson. And I'll tell you, I was blinded by just talking to him the other day, that can just see the logistics of it. Like, Jake Paul is a big dude. He's like 230 right now. He's the skill set. Way bigger than Mike. He has the skills. He has the power.
And Mike Tyson. 28 years old, guys. There's a 30-year difference.
Yeah, we're not going to break down the fight just yet. I got excited about the card. I got excited about being at the presser and doing some content with the one and only Mike Tyson, who wasn't really cooperating, but still kind of did. He gave me one awesome line. I was like, yo, what are three fights you wish you had? And you can see his whole team is ready to leave. He's like, I fought everyone I wanted to fight. I was like, okay, that doesn't help. How about a mythical figure, though? I'm the only mythical figure in this room. Like, what a line.
That wasn't the question, Mike, but okay.
What a line. Like, you salvaged this little clip. It has like a million views now. Thank you, Mike. You're awesome. But just being around him was pretty damn cool, and it was awesome.
I wish he went into his very deep knowledge of the sport of boxing and be like, oh, I wish I could have fought Harry Greb, or like, you know, like.
That's where I was thinking he was going to go.
Like, that would have been super cool. Or like, oh, I would have loved to have tussled with Jack Johnson, you know, like something cool like that.
I've had those conversations with him, and he just wasn't in that mindset. He was done with the presser. He was just like ready to get in the SUV and leave. Like, I've had those conversations with him, like all time greats and stuff. I should have threw a few more out there for him. We also talk ring walks. I brought up that DMX one from 1999 when he fought Franz Botha. He didn't even remember it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, people tell me that was awesome. I'm like, what, bro? It's like, has like one of the most infamous ever. I'm like, so what are you thinking about on your ring walks? Not much. You know. So it was still Mike, but it was like, all right, bro, I'll catch you another time. We'll get you maybe fight. I just think he's done with the media at some. When he's done, he's done.
I don't blame him, dude. I was towards the end too. I hate it. I hated media stuff like at the end of my career.
Right, and then think about him. He's probably top five most famous faces in the world, right?
He also hasn't done it for 20 something years. So it's like to get thrown back into this, like around this kind of event. That's
tough. What he said. That's what he said to Ariel Helwani, who hosted it. He said, man, my press conferences weren't like this, like to announce fights. Like, his were pretty big. Like, Lennox Lewis one was big, but it was like in a small little ballroom in New York City. Like, that's a good point. And I think Tyson was kind of taken back by the whole sheer size and scope of this fight. The Netflix aspect was really cool. They had Netflix people there. So, yeah, that's July 20th. Yeah, I'm going to figure out a way to get there because you know I got to be there. Hope everyone enjoys the fights this weekend. We have a really fun Saturday. Once again, PPV.com is the place to order Fury versus Usyk. You can join me and Chris in the chat. We're going to be very active. We're going to be as active as Tyson Fury's jab. We're going to be as active as Dennis Baranchik's jab. We're going to be as active as me on Bumble. We're going to be active. Whoever listens to the ends, whoever gets to the ends of these episodes, they learn the most about us.
Who really watch it till the cans flipped? They get the goods. That's where the gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yes. So whoever's listening right now, thank you for getting to the end of this episode. I'm riding with Fury. Chris is riding with Usyk. Let's go, Undisputed. Let's get fired up, fans. Let's get fired up. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.